So I'm here with Jill Magid at the Liverpool Biennale. Jill, I'd like to talk about your work, which is all about CCTV and surveillance and is, in fact, a video installation.
Yes, I'm American, but I'm based now in Amsterdam. And a piece I did before this was with the Amsterdam Police Department, and it also had to do with surveillance. In that instance, I covered surveillance cameras with Juuls, and I got permission from the Amsterdam Police Department to do this. Anyways, from that, I got very interested in working with the police departments and their relationship with surveillance in public and private space. So when I was commissioned to do the piece for the Liverpool Biennial, I researched the police and the CCTV system here and found out that there are 250 cameras in the city that are monitored from a secret control room. And in that case, I was very interested in this idea of the city being a stage or a theater that was watched all at once, all the time. Because of the Data Protection Act that's specific to the UK, they have laws in that they hold the footage for 31 days. And unless the footage is considered evidence, it's erased after 31 days. So I wanted to be saved as evidence and to use Liverpool as a platform for performance. And I wanted the police to be my film crew. So I didn't actually tell the police I was an artist, but I ended up over many, many months of discussing the law with the operations manager through meeting with him in email that I would come and explore the relationship between the city and public space and through surveillance. And I stayed for 31 days, which is one cycle of memory. And my book is called One Cycle of Memory in the City of L. Through those 31 days, the police and I, certain controllers, got very, very close. And by the end, it became a love story, actually, that plays out through the surveillance cameras.
You dressed up for this. You dressed up in very distinctive clothes in order to presumably pick yourself out in these surveillance works. How did the police get involved with the saving of the evidence? At what stage were they in the know?
They weren't ever in the know until they got the letters, which were after. I must say, I do think that the operations manager, who is the chief, because he and I were the ones that emailed so much about the law, where I had the same questions as you have of how do you access information, what is an evidence locker, all of these legal questions he and I were discussing and I was researching from his answers. When he first met me a year ago, I was introduced with a biennial staff, but that was really through our discussions kind of overlooked. And he never discussed any of this with the controllers. He only told them that I was someone who was coming to research the system. And he actually left the first 2 weeks. And I was given names of certain police officers, and I just came in and I told them I'll always be wearing a red leather coat and white gloves. We started out very business, let's say, oriented with, okay, I'm going to walk from this place to this place to this place. Will you zoom in and pull back and try different angles so I can see the capacity of the camera? But then through much more time spent together, it became a collaboration. And even though I think they were aware that this was a very strange thing to be doing, I was very prepared with the law. So whenever they'd ask me questions, I said, well, we're doing this because in the Data Protection Act, it says if there's, let's say, a lot of people in the background, they need to be blurred out. So we need to do shots with groups. Or can you read a letter I'm writing? So it really became an experiment. I mean, I gave them lessons in film theory, like how to film me. And they said that they actually learned a lot about their system as well. So they were being very responsible. It wasn't that they weren't. It just became a very incredible experience for all of us, I think.
And the art piece is in two parts because it's a book, a kind of catalogue of your letters and correspondence, as you said, that becomes almost like a love letter.
Yeah.
And then also your installation video piece as well.
Yes, the way to access footage, to see the footage by law, you have to fill out a subject access request form. And I treated the subject access request form like a love letter, which actually at first I would say wasn't a love letter and developed further into being a love letter as we got closer. But within that letter, I detail all the legal information that they do need to find me. So I tell them exactly the time of day, what I was wearing, every kind of thing that they need to know to find me was in the letter, along with the extra things of how I was feeling, what I dreamt the night before. So it was a mixture, and they had to read it to find the legal things. So I would say the story is told on different levels through this book, through the videos, through the sound. There's many angles.
You were just mentioning about work you made in Amsterdam and the differences between making work, say, in Liverpool or in Boston to Amsterdam. Can we just talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I went to graduate school at MIT, and that's when I first started working with technology, because I had been really interested always in finding private, intimate spaces within the city. And at MIT, I got introduced to using technology to do that. And so there in Boston, where people were very body conscious and not very much intimacy, even between people that you were friends with, I found that very disturbing. So I started working with these miniature surveillance cameras, and there was an information monitor that was in the main lobby of MIT. And I hijacked it with a spy surveillance kit, which is quite easy to do, and showed my body in real time over the broadcast that MIT had put on. And police came, and it was definitely not working with the police. It was guerrilla style. And then when I moved to Amsterdam, I didn't feel the need to work this way because people didn't have these issues with body and intimacy, and so it wasn't an interesting place to explore anymore. But then what I got interested in was the surveillance camera itself and how it's almost like a gargoyle or a band-aid for safety in public space, that I felt that it didn't matter if anyone was looking, it's just you put the camera up and it becomes this show of power. And at the Amsterdam police station and headquarters, they had 9 giant surveillance cameras right on the station. So I wanted to jewel their cameras because it's such a display of power. So that was the first time I approached the police directly and asked, as an artist, could I work with them? And they said to me very harshly, "We don't work with artists." So I invented a company called System Azure Security Ornamentation and made business cards that say, "Jill Magid, Head Security Ornamentation Professional." And I went in and I dressed in a suit and said, "I'm a professional ornamentation surveillance operator, and I'm here to discuss your relationship with public space and surveillance." And after 6 months of negotiation, which was mainly about color of the jewels to match their police slogans, they paid me to climb up their building and install jeweled cameras that are permanent. So that was my first introduction to how to negotiate with a power institution. But what was so different about Liverpool was that, again, I masqueraded, let's say, in some way. It was a performance. But I worked with the police to create a much more intimate situation than this other business sort of situation with Amsterdam.